Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, large experience from hundreds, no, thousands of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe so you won't miss a new episode. I'm your host, Fritz Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted and privileged to have a conversation with Masud Bilgili. Masud, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Fritz. It's very nice being here.
And allow me to introduce you to our audience. You describe yourself as a passionate impact maker, devoted your career to leveraging entrepreneurial principles to address the pressing social and environmental challenges. And you specifically do that as the founder of Life After Disaster, but you also have experience with as the founder of Connected Worldwide and were the director of the Expo 365 in Turkey, and you live in Istanbul. So again, welcome to the program. First question, when did you realize I wanted to be a social entrepreneur, or I am a social entrepreneur, or I want to be a social entrepreneur? When did that enter in your life?
Okay, so I have always been an entrepreneur in heart. I started my first business when I was 23, after I graduated. At that time, I was, you know, working on TV commercials, and then it kind of transformed itself into a small boutique ad agency. And for, you know, more than a decade, that was my, you know, only focus. But at some point, I realized that, you know, I'm not very happy in that life anymore. I deeply care about the global issues and, you know, the problems we go through as a humanity altogether. Yeah. So I decided to kind of use my talents, you know, channel it into kind of creating awareness towards those issues. Obviously, you know, it still was a professional job. I was more focusing on finding sponsorships, you know, and creating these awareness campaigns in cooperation with, you know, private sector actors. Last year, there was an earthquake in Turkey, which completely changed my life. And I think we will be talking about it in a second.
Yes. Yeah, because we're definitely going to cover the earthquake as soon as possible. But I also want to ask you to tell us a little bit more about your work as mobilizing diverse stakeholders, fostering collaboration. That is one of the key things to make things work. And I'm just wondering where that experience came from and how you apply that in the recent earthquake disaster which hit Turkey. So yeah. Could you maybe tell the audience what happened and how did it affect you personally?
Of course. First and foremost, I do believe that anytime a difficulty arises, we should come together and try to find solutions collectively. So, and I do reject the idea of always looking authorities to provide answers, right? So like we should be our own solutions and we should do it by collaborating with other people, you know, creating networks, kind of increasing our impact in this world. So that's my personal belief. It might be right or wrong, but everything I do, I operate from this point of view. A year ago, in 6th of February, there was this devastating earthquake at the south of Turkey. 10 cities got affected, but one of the cities, which happens to be my parents' hometown actually, got almost like completely destroyed. 80% of the city is gone right now. And a countless number of people lost their lives. I personally lost more than 10 relatives in that earthquake. Distant relatives, but still, you know, people I knew and loved. So even though I physically I was safe, I didn't really suffer through that disaster. Emotionally, it was very difficult for me. And also it was very unexpected and shocking, because the first week, I didn't even process the size of the impact and what really was going on. But then I started to think, okay, so what can I do to contribute? I cannot drive, you know, heavy equipment. I'm not a very strong person. I cannot go there and carry stuff around. I could volunteer, but that probably is not the best way to use my talent. So after a week of the earthquake, I published this LinkedIn article. And in that article, I said, we all have superpowers, which means we all have skills and network and, you know, expertise. And if we bring them together, we can really help this region better than a person can do by themselves. So this was the premise. And I called it Life After Disaster, because the question was, now that this shocking, devastating event happened, how are we going to define our lives after such events? And obviously, I was kind of putting it out there as a general question, but it was my personal struggle and journey to find answers for my own self. And that was a good reception. People really responded it well. We started to get in touch with various people in this field, disaster recovery and management. During this time, I met with some mentors. I met with some experts. They had a immense effect on my journey while I was launching Life After Disaster as an organization.
Hold on to that thought. I want to kind of back to the mentors later.
Okay, of course. And our basic idea was and still is, if we are going to bring people together and create a larger impact than we personally can, how can we really do this effectively? So the first answer was, we need to bring the locals into this organization and discussion. Like, we shouldn't be acting like this outside group that goes to the region, you know, just to do the disaster recovery work. Instead, this our focus should be on increasing the local capacity, and the local people should be part of the answer. But then the next step, if we are going to do this in a devastated area, there is not much infrastructure yet left. And, you know, even finding like a gathering spaces is difficult. There is no internet connection. The public transportation is mostly, at that time, I mean, now it's better, but at that time, mostly dysfunctional. So under these circumstances, how we can bring people together? And step by step, we started to solve these problems. And today we are at a stage that we are running community centers in the region. We are launching events. We are bringing local organizations together, kind of like networking them with experts, mentors. So like, we really created a good system out of this really upsetting situation in the last 1 year.
Masoud, may I ask you, what is your business model in this case? What are you offering or trying to promote? I don't want to use the word sell in this case, but what do people get when they talk with Life After Disaster?
So it's a very good question. Life After Disaster, up to this point, is mostly self-funded, meaning I am funding the operations myself. On top of that, we do have some sponsors, and also there are people who are personally contributing it with donations. We do not charge any money. We do not provide any commercial services. Our long-term goal, there is two directions that this is evolving into. Our main goal is to turning this into an international network of grassroots organizations that focus on disaster recovery. So, like we, I. see it as a pilot program at this moment. Obviously, it's very personal and I have a very organic connection to it. But since that we gained this expertise, how can we take it to the next step and kind of apply what we learned here to other regions when the need arises, and how we can bring the organizations, not from, a region in Turkey, but all different places who are going through similar things, how we can bring them together. So
Okay.
this is the first step, and it will, when it reaches a critical level, it will be charging, maybe subscription fees. It will have bigger sponsors, because there is a commercial interest in supporting these kind of organizations, like, for example, from the insurance companies, from the healthcare sector, right? So there is a commercial interest is there to support these kind of efforts. Obviously, we need to be able to see, show them that, in fact, this thing is functional and it can create value
Okay.
for their investment. So this is the one side of it. And the other side of it, I'm personally looking into developing solutions that's going to make this entire process more efficient, but more like commercial solutions. At this moment, I cannot really reveal what we have in the pipeline, but we are actively working on it. And at some point, we will also release them as paid services as well.
Okay. Who are your clients in this case? And also, does this group, if there or more groups, do they actually appreciate your services?
So we don't have clients, but we do have partners. We do partner with international organizations, local nonprofits, and also grassroots community organizations. We are more, we play the role of a platform. So our, actually, the goal is to make their efforts more efficient, and bring them with the resources they really need in order to succeed. So it works both ways. For example, you come from Europe, but you really want to start a project in the region. Obviously, it may be difficult for you because it's kind of, there are barriers to penetrate before you really reach the locals and, start good relationships and really make a difference there. So we are in a position to accelerate that process and kind of enable you to use your resources more effectively by doing that just by yourself. So that's one way it works. But the other way around is the local organizations, they have a a difficult time connecting with, you know, national or international groups or nonprofits. There are language barrier, cultural differences, you know, all kind of like, plus doing networking is a almost like a full-time job, and they've got other issues there. So also, we also help them to reach kind of the resources.
Very much providing that liaison alliance skills to connect the organizations to each other.
Exactly.
Now, how, I mean, we also have a government, local governments, we have with fire departments, national guards. I would say the default organizations I would think of who might want to take on that coordinating role you're offering. So how do they view what you are offering?
I think we are filling a need that is neglected. So all these organizations you mentioned are actually happy that we are doing this work, because very understandably, they've got other issues to deal with. Like, you know, you need to rebuild an entire region. There's infrastructure investments. There is healthcare. There is security, right? Like, there is so much going on in terms of public services, that's an organization that helps other local organizations to grow is very much needed and very much appreciated. So we were able to easily partner with anybody that's in the field. And, you know, mostly we got support from our peers. So I can say that, you know, my experience was positive.
Okay, now that's good to hear. Good that you're able to provide that, fill in that gap. Now I was wondering, the earthquake happened last year. So at a certain point after the disaster, you can likely identify a moment in time, okay, we are recovered from that disaster. So what does that mean for your organization? Does this mean you're going to prepare and anticipate for the next disaster? Or do you think this has been a dedicated project for the 10 cities which were affected because my parents lived there?
So the region itself, I think it's going to take at least 5 to 10 years to recover. In that terms, there will always be something to do, even after that 10 years, you know, because even if you rebuild the entire region, that entire recovery phase creates gaps in, you know, for example, youth education, you know, economic investments, all kinds of things. So you can't just dedicate your entire life to just one region if you want to. But for us, I think it depends on two things. First of all, how much funding we get, because right now we have a capacity to operate in this one region, but if we need to grow, our own resources won't be enough for it. So we really need, you know, scalable funding sources. So that's one thing. And the other thing is how confident we feel about the solutions we develop. Because right now, we are still trying to learn certain things. And what I mean by that is every time you want to kind of go to the next place, there are cultural differences. So even in the same region, operating in one neighborhood doesn't necessarily translate into being successful into the next neighborhood. And I am kind of cautious about not becoming too confident and believing that we have all the answers and kind of going step by step and really trying to figure out, you know, how we can create the best value for the people we get in touch with.
Okay. A couple of questions before I, one more question before I come back to the mentors you mentioned in the beginning. Is it a pro or a con, the fact that you have an emotional relationship with this disaster? So to what extent does that stand in the way of being objective?
That's an excellent question. I think both. So if I wasn't emotionally connected to it to begin with, I probably wouldn't understand how much this kind of events affect a person's life at a very deep emotional level. Like I would still try to help, but then it would be a more of a technical problem for me. And you know, for some people and organizations, that's what exactly it is. I do not judge, yet I do believe if that's our approach, a huge dimension of disaster recovery just gets missing.
Okay.
So this emotional connection kind of helped me to see a bigger picture than otherwise. So that's the pro. The con is it's extremely tiring. And, you know, this was a very roller coaster year for me. I am happy that I'm doing this, but if I knew that how this was gonna go, I probably would think twice before entering it, because you can't imagine the kind of things I saw and stories I heard. It's very difficult on its human psyche to, you know, deal with this personally. So that is the con, because we also need to care about our own mental health too.
That actually is indeed your story leads me to triggers me to ask a question. I would say professionals, they also get training in being in a disaster environment, and sometimes when their environment sees you've been too much too long in this environment, you need to take a break. Who mentions that to you? Do you have a safeguard that you're not going to jeopardize your own health?
Yeah. So I think at this point we can talk about the mentors.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who support me. I'm luckier than most. When I first step into this journey, I already had a large network of international friends, expats, you know, various connections due to my previous work. So I was able to mobilize it very quickly. And a friend of mine introduced me some experts who actually run these kind of organizations. One of them is Jennifer Gray Thompson. She runs the After the Fire US. They are located in California. And when I met her, she told me a few things. And I would like to share them, you know, with your audience, because I think it's very valuable, regardless of you are in the disaster field or not. And the first thing was, she didn't ask me who I am, who I was, what I could do. Instead, she said, "What do you need? How can I help?" And at that moment, you cannot really believe what kind of difference it made in my life. Just somebody who's ready to listen and says, you know, what can I do? How can I help you? So that's by itself was a very big emotional comfort. Somebody I can talk to, somebody is going to listen to me. And then she also told me her story, how she started her organization. And she said, pay attention. People, and to a certain point, people are not going to take you serious. But if you just keep on going, you will see, you will, you know, create a big impact. And also that was true. Like, because first 6 months, yeah, that was a good support I was receiving. And people were still caring about, you know, what we do. But also there was a, you know, good amount of resistance coming because nobody knew, you know, us. We were just a new kind of like players in the field. But we kept on going. And I always remember that, you know, up to a certain point, people may not take you serious, but just keep on going and, you know, you will create a big impact. So that was a very good advice as well. And returning back to your question, who is kind of helping me, who is supporting my mental health? So Jennifer is just one example. I'm surrounded with people who very much care about me, care about what I do, and, you know, they have a very big help in my journey, both emotionally and with their knowledge, expertise, network as well.
Okay, so I was wondering, in that sense, is there a difference between, a distinction between a mentor and a coach? Because I find it interesting you say that your mentors care about who you are and your mental health, and not necessarily about the cause you're trying to support.
Well, I think they care about both. Okay.
But they also care about you as a person. That's my point.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. But I don't know if this is a common thing or unique situation. I don't know. You know, it's not difficult for me to connect emotionally, like kind of emotionally connect with other people, even out of this context. So I'm, you know, usually all my relationships, even the business relationships, are very friendly. So I don't find it very difficult to kind of like create that authentic relationship with people. But maybe it's not that common. I don't really know.
Hey, it's been fascinating talking to you, Masud, about your work and your personal story, and which is so personal given the role of your parents in this case. I was wondering, how do you look at the future? Do you hope that your organization at the end of the day will always have a place and a function, or do you hope that it will become obsolete and that others will take over? Because where do you want to stand? Where do you want to see this going to?
I really wish and hope that everything would we do would become obsolete and unnecessary in the future. Unfortunately, the way things evolve in the world, it seems as there will be more and more events every year.
Yeah.
And not just us, but there will be a need for, you know, a lot of organization and people to step in and kind of do their best. But my wish is, you know, I hope all this was unnecessary and we were just living in a very different world and under different conditions.
Now, final question for those people listening to this, what would be your question to them How could they help you? Is there anything where you feel, hey, I'd like to reach out?
Of course. So I'm always, like personally, I'm always open to connect with people. So anybody who just wants to have a chat, who has any ideas, who are working on this, you know, any kind of solution, they can reach me on LinkedIn. I'm very happy to connect. From the organization's perspective, we are looking forward to get together with other local organizations. So if anyone, you know, in your audience are in that position, we would be very happy to meet them and kind of investigate together how we can grow our efforts internationally.
Great. Well, I did interview a number of people on this similar topic, so I'll also do my part to connect you to those people. And again, Masoud, I want to thank you so much, Tessiculaire, for sharing your story, what you're doing, why you're doing it, and hopefully people will be inspired and realize what, as you said, keep on grinding, and eventually you will be able to provide impact. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fritz. It was very great talking to you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.